Hello, my name is Debbie Boone, and I want to welcome you to my podcast, The Bend, where we explore how successful people navigated the path and emerged in a better place when life threw them an unexpected twist. It's inspired by one of my favorite sayings, "The bend in the road is not the end of the road unless you fail to make the curve." These conversations will hopefully help you and inspire you to embrace your personal bend and to flourish. I hope you enjoy it, and if you need help with your own personal navigation and you're in veterinary medicine, please feel free to reach out to me at Debbie Boone, 2Manage Vets Consulting. Enjoy the bend and be inspired by our wonderful guest. Welcome. Welcome everyone to today's session of The Bend. I am your host, Debbie Boone, and today I have with me a special guest, Ann Tomczyk. Now, Ann and her team have built a company called Prevent Vet that has some of the coolest little books and tools and things that help veterinarians educate clients and make our lives a little bit better and easier, because as we know, we spend a whole lot of time, or we should spend a lot of time, educating people. I used to tell my team their primary role was as a teacher, and medicine then came second. She is the co-founder and CEO of Prevent Vet, but prior to that, and this is what I love, she was the president and chief storyteller, a strategic storyteller, because, you know, I'm a Southern girl and we love to tell a story. Then she also was a vice president of brand and communication for Trupanion. And so she's been in this veterinary space for more than a minute. So, Ann, thanks for being on. And I appreciate your willingness to come and share a little bit of your story and how you're changing the profession for the better.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your origin story. How did you decide to get into veterinary medicine, or was that how you planned on your life going? It just ended up that way.
Well, life takes different turns, as you know, and sometimes you find yourself in the place that you should be, even though you didn't plan to be there. So I got my degree in broadcasting and was far more interested in the business side of storytelling, and decided to go into corporate communications and video production and all those things that go along with telling stories and helping people understand very complex concepts. I was mostly specializing in financial services. So while not terribly sexy, it is an industry that impacts people's lives, and they feel very intimidated without having the financial knowledge when they're speaking to somebody, whether it's a financial advisor or whomever. So I decided one day that I needed to tell a story that was my own, that was not paid for by a client. I had my own corporate communications agency called Strategic Storytellers, and I decided to produce a video story. I hate being on camera, by the way. Hate it.
Well, thank you for this today, then.
So I, always do something that scares you every day. So I did, and I put myself on camera and I told the story of how pet insurance, being a financial product, had helped our family. And we had two dogs at the time, and one was super healthy and one was not. And we lost our healthy dog first, and it was a big surprise. It was cancer and we didn't know, and the tumor erupted and she,
oh my goodness,
she passed out. Mm-hmm. So told the story and sent it to Trupanion unsolicited and said, this is going on my corporate website as a demo of what I do. I mean, I had many, many clients at the time, but I wanted to do a story that was mine. So I sent it to them. And within an hour, Daryl Rawlings, the CEO of Trupanion, called. And he said, okay, I've put down the tissues now. How come you know so much about our industry? And how do you know our brand so well? And I said, well, that's what I do for a living, is the rest of the story. It's too long to tell, but here I am in Seattle. I did join Trupanion for a stint to help them set their strategy for brand. And then I loved the Pacific Northwest. My husband and I fell in love with Seattle. And so we decided to shut down our company in Canada and start one in this industry.
Awesome. Well, I agree with you. I love Seattle. It's a little sad about how many homeless people there are now compared to just a few years ago when I traveled out. But hopefully, people are getting the help that they need and the city is working on that. I know for sure. Tell us a little bit about, other than the fact that you are an animal person, how did a preventive vet come to be?
Well, when I was at Trupanion, I realized in seeing the claims that were coming through there, so much could have been prevented had the pet owner only known something very simple. Didn't need a medical degree to have prevented some of the suffering, both for the family and the animal. The financial stress, even though these people had insurance, there's still financial stress and just the stress of their pet being in a compromised position. So talking to veterinarians that were working there and other veterinarians I met realized that there just wasn't enough preventive education out there. And this is 12, 13 years ago. So a lot has changed since then, and a lot of platforms have taken to providing this kind of information in sort of an ad hoc way. But it really needed to be focused on, and nobody was focusing on pushing information out to pet owners in a very strategic way that helped them prevent things that really are avoidable. No veterinarian wants to see something that could have been avoided. They will help you in any situation, but any vet I've spoken to has said, look, I don't want to see a UO case. I don't want to see GDV. I don't want to see those things, especially if they have progressed really far. So not only are we here to help create awareness of some of these things, but also create awareness of the early signs so that you can get into the veterinarian sooner than later.
Well, I think just some of the things that I can recall in practice when I was managing, we see these things all the time as a veterinarian, but the clients don't know what we know. So it kills me to see a dog riding in the back of a truck. And I just know that because I've seen them thrown from the back of a truck, road rash and degloving at best, and then death, at the worst when the car behind them runs over them or they jump out to chase a deer or whatever it is. So those little cautionary tales, I think, are extremely valuable because people just don't think they'll do that. Often people assume that animals have the same sensibilities that humans do. I can always remember the lady whose dog came up pregnant, and she said, "Oh my gosh, but the only other animal in the house is her brother. They would not have sex. They're siblings, but they're dogs, just dogs." So there's a lot of preventative education that needs to happen out there, more so than just flea, tick, heartworm, and stuff like that. So I love the fact too that you have behavior consultants, because as someone who is a Fear Free certified and sits on the Fear Free Advisory Board, I do feel like a lot of behavior problems are exacerbated by pet owners without them knowing, and some of it has to do with loving their animals too much. So tell us a little bit about, you have what, three books that are out there, and they're like the 101 tips books. Tell us a little bit about the book.
So we have a book series. Like you said, we have three titles. They're the 101 Essential Tips series. We have a dog and cat health and safety, and then we have a dog behavior and training. And they're all preventive in nature. So the health and safety ones are obviously health and safety accident avoidance tips. And these are things that many of them do get discussed in the exam room, but given that there's 101, all these things aren't discussed, and you just don't have time. And some of it's very specific to a specific breed or lifestyle that that family has. We talk about heat stroke, brachycephalic pets are certainly more at risk. So there are a lot of things that are in there that people just don't think about. I've been in this industry well over 12, 13 years now, and I founded Preventive Vet almost 10 years ago, and I learn something every single day that blows my mind. There is something to learn all the time. Even the veterinarians on our team learn stuff from our behavior folks or from us silly pet owners who don't have a medical degree and don't understand things. Sometimes, medical professionals, because they're freaking smart, so much and expect or think that we might know it because it's just second nature to them. Mm-hmm. But we don't.
No, we don't.
And it needs to be pushed out there. That's why these books were created, primarily for veterinarians to be the one dispensing it to their clients, because as human beings, we don't Google things in a preventive fashion. Everything, for the most part, that's Googled online is reactionary. No, it's not proactive. Something has happened to my pet, and now I want to figure out what to do or why it's happening. And oftentimes it's too late because it's already happened. So if we can push preventive education to the pet owner at the earliest stage, which is often their first relationship is with their veterinarian when they get a pet, that is the most valuable place to have that education dispensed.
Yeah, I really like the fact that you have the dog and cat, because I feel like just in my pet life and my time as manager of general practices, that people who have cats don't think that they need the level of care that dogs do. And so by having this available to give on the first kitten visit, I think you're reinforcing the fact that these animals need to see a veterinarian too. There's amazing statistics about, you know, they see the veterinarian through the vaccine series, and 75% of them don't see the pet again until it's time to put them to sleep. And those poor cats, all in between that time, there's so much that we could do to help them as far as arthritis, and, you know, they might be diabetic. I mean, who knows? We also know that cats have dental problems, and that a huge amount of them have tooth resorptions that are painful and cause them to have pain. So, yeah, I love the fact that we are giving somebody a tool that actually can educate them. Now, you also have videos online, and I use some of them myself because I got a new dog and I've had dogs my whole life. This one was a challenge because he was a show dog. He was unneutered when I got him. He had bad behavior. He wanted to lift his leg on everything. And he had been raised in a kennel with seven other dogs and just it was a free for all there most of the time. So trying to train an adult dog who was 16 months old, housebreaking and starting from scratch. So thank you for your videos because they were helpful and refreshed my memory of like reinforcement of things and keep doing what you're doing. So when you started this company, obviously you were an experienced entrepreneur. Was this kind of a scary event for you? Did you think, oh my gosh, is this really going to work? Because I think starting a business is a very brave thing to do.
Every friend that we have has said that to me, that they could not do it. They cannot go out on their own. They feel, you know, they need the security of a salary and a job. And I guess I'm built in a different way. When I was a child, I always started up my store and had my little sister come and buy things from it. And I had my cash and cash register. And I just always wanted to be in business. But having said that, it is really scary. It's the first company I started and the first employee I hired, she was starting on a Monday. And that Sunday night, I think I had a panic attack. I never felt that before, but I felt an extreme level of anxiety. Just realizing that you now have somebody else that your business should be taking care of and should be responsible for. And I had been very transparent with her. I said, I know that I can keep you on for a year. We'll have to just see what happens throughout the course of this year. And she was transitioning from an industry into my industry. So this was kind of a career change for her. And she was very grateful for the opportunity to do that. So transparency is key. But it is.
What do you consider to be your biggest career mistake, Anne? And what was your takeaway from that?
My biggest career mistake I make every day. learned. But I think the biggest mistake is that I don't believe in myself enough. I was a very shy child, and my parents realized that and put me into drama class so that it would help me come out of my shell. And that helped give me the tools at least to combat shyness. But I would often sit back and have great ideas sitting at a boardroom table with clients and the rest of my teammates when I worked for others. And I'd have these great ideas. I wouldn't speak them. And then days later, somebody else would come up with the idea and it was genius. Everybody thought that person was a genius. And so repeatedly that happening, I started to build some confidence that I need to speak up. I do have something to say and worth. So, you know, that was a very young Anne. I've grown since then, but even starting in this industry, I have to admit that I feared, because I didn't have a veterinary degree or a medical background, that I wouldn't be able to build something that was valid in this industry and helpful for veterinary professionals. And I'm glad I persevered, because didn't do it alone, but I certainly bring elements to the industry and to our company that others with medical degrees don't have. And so you have to bring a whole team together. Success is not just done with one person, it's done with a whole team. So my biggest mistake is often doubting myself, but then I get over it and I persevere.
Just push through the doubt. I think that's that's an amazing thing. Now, when we think about PreventaVet, how is this being utilized in practices? How can we kind of bend the profession for the good by utilizing this tool that you've built for us?
Sure. Well, our books are in tactile form, so the physical book itself is purchased, and most often veterinarians are using it in client welcome packs for new clients, or as wellness plan perks or things like that. For a medical professional to read the book, I mean, many of them have said, hey, I even learned something reading this book. Many, many have said that. But a lot of it seems obvious. But I think they need to get over the fact that it's not obvious for us pet owning people, and they need truly to be the one dispensing it. I remember my veterinarian when I got my first dog, she warned me about GDV. You know, my dog was a barrel-chested dog. And to this day, I still, you know, take precautions with my dog when it comes to GDV, because I still have barrel-chested dogs. And I remember her because of that. And I'm so grateful that she told me some of those tips at that time. Veterinarians can utilize these books in a welcome pack, or we have them in digital form. And so we provide a tent signage that they can put, or posters in their practice. And it's a QR code. The client can download the book, access it right away. And with the digital form of our books, we have all kinds of other resources that are attached to each tip. So let's say with our behavior and training book, there are tons of videos, like you said, whether we've created them or others have created great content online. We watch those videos, our medical team and our behavior team, we vet them. We then share them with the tips. So if it's a tip about potty training or creating a safe space or noise aversion, we have so many other resources that go with each tip that people can read or watch and help them. So the books are very, very useful in tactile paperback form or in digital form.
I think it's important for us. You've made a point that I've been making for many years. We should not judge our clients by our yardstick, because we have this knowledge and we do live in it all the time. And I find that even for me, who've been in vet med since 1985, there's a lot I don't know, and it changes rapidly too. So to have that veterinarian talk to me, and sometimes they talk to me in medicalese, because they know that I know some things, but I don't know that many things. So I will actually say, you need to dial that down a little bit. But a lot of people won't do that because they don't want to feel foolish or ignorant. So these books are a great out for that. Like, you don't have to know everything, because there they are. You know, these are all the things that you didn't even know to ask about for your pet. So I think that's a really wonderful tool. Obviously, storytelling has a lot to do with the books. So how do you feel like the storytelling in the books helps make the education stick.
Well, we've actually had several pet owners comment on the stories themselves and say, and they've told us that it really helps put things into context. Because like you talked about the dog in the back of a truck, you could have had a dog, many dogs throughout your lifetime. You put them in the back of the truck and nothing ever happened. And we get told that all the time. Oh, this is ridiculous. I've had dogs all my life and that's never happened. Like chewing on bones. Oh, that's ridiculous. You know, it's never going to chip a tooth or harm them. What are you talking about? It only takes that one time. It only takes that one pet that is different from a previous pet. Mm-hmm. Putting context around the tips and explaining that these tips are the most common reasons why pets are going to the vet or the emergency. These are very, very common things that happen day after day after day. One of the tips is about pet suffocation. And pets, every single day in the US, mostly dogs, but some cats, suffocate in chip bags. Mm-hmm. And people don't think about that. I mean, they have themselves or their teenagers or whomever leaving bags around on the coffee table, even in the trash bin, and the dog gets in there and it's just irresistible. And they cannot get that bag off their head, no matter how much that dog weighs.
Right.
So it's just making them realize that these things do happen, putting it into a storytelling concept. So the tip is there, and some of those tips have a story that mm-hmm. sort of paints the picture.
Yeah, I think that's funny that you chose that as an example, because when I throw my chip bags away, I take a knife and I split them before they go in the garbage, because it's true. I mean, again, going back so for many years, these are the things that you see. And we had a client once whose dog ate Baker's cocoa. And of course, it died because of the bromine poisoning. Mm-hmm. And she was just baking stuff and knocked this off of the counter and it decided to eat. I mean, it tastes terrible. I can't imagine. But, you know, that doesn't matter to a dog, no matter what it tastes, it eats. And it ate that. So there's getting into your own medications, chewing through the plastic bottles and getting into medications. So I've always loved telling cautionary tales as a way to make the education stick, because people really go, my dog would never do that. Yes, he will. And it only takes once. And I think talking to people who've worked in the insurance industry, you really do know what these common things are. And I think that's one of the things that Nationwide does when they bring out these reports about the different breeds and the cautionary tales that they're seeing there. It's extremely helpful for me, for one thing, to be able to tell people these things, and for veterinarians to say, hey, we have some digital, I mean, actually here's data proof that this stuff is happening. So don't think it's not going to happen to your pet, because you're right. It only takes once. Advocating for pet insurance. When I got Tucker, the first thing he got was an insurance mm-hmm. policy, because even though I am a super conscientious pet owner, a little paranoid, truthfully, I think I know too much, right? Makes you paranoid. There's still a possibility that, and I know what is out there compared to, you know, when I started in veterinary medicine in 1985, there wasn't a lot you could do for animals. It was flea and steroids and hit by cars, and you just kind of put them back together. But today we have an incredible amount of medical power, I would say, to fix animal, but you got to have the money to do it. And that is the hitch. So yes, preventing it. Tell me about, I always like to ask the value of networking. You've pulled together a team. Did networking help you find the right people to pull together?
Well, I talked about being shy. So it's definitely something that I don't do well in terms of networking, but it is so important. And it truly is in any business. It's who you know, and you need to get out there and meet people. And it's been invaluable to be part of various different organizations. You and I are part of Vet Partners. Mm-hmm. And a member for almost 6 years now, and just meeting people through that organization, going to veterinary conferences and seeing all the companies that are out there and speaking to their representatives and learning who is who and who does what and who's the leader in what area. You really do have to get to know your industry, get to know the people. And I'm quite amazed how small this industry is for the most part.
It's so true. I've always told people, don't burn your bridges because the people never change, just the business cards. They move from company to company, but it's still the same people. And I can remember when I started my company, one of the first things I did was reach out to someone who was my sales rep. And he said, oh, yeah, you were always so nice to me in the practice. And I definitely will put you to work and, have you come and do some consulting and some presentations. Well, now he's just moved way up into that company. So he's regional vice president or something like that. So you just keep these relationships throughout your life and realize that, you're not doing it to be self-serving. You're doing it just because for me, it's fun. I'm not shy. So I actually like talking to strangers. I gave a class at AHA one year on how to talk, have a conversation with a stranger. And my opening line was, I'm one of those people who talks to people on airplanes, and the whole room went, I said, but I've met amazing and interesting people on airplanes. You just never know. So there you go. So, Anne, tell us a little bit more about like how people can reach out and or how practices, what's your feedback on this? How are people responding and letting you know? I mean, obviously they're reordering it as company is successful. What tips would you give somebody who says, oh, I'd like to put these in place, but I don't know a process. I need a workflow for it.
Well, we try to get as easy as possible so that it doesn't really have to change a process too much within an organization, but within a practice. But as you full well know, really the whole team utilized, the whole team should be utilized in creating that relationship as soon as somebody comes in the door, that the concept of hospitality and getting to know them and having a conversation and asking about their pet. And when you do that, you can then share knowledge and tidbits based on what you're hearing. And the person at the front desk can do that just as well as the nurse or veterinarian or the veterinarian. You're all getting little bits of information. I have greatly benefited in my own human health adventures when I've been given tips that have nothing to do with that practitioner. That practitioner has nothing to gain by telling me which cereal is good for my gluten sensitivities, and I can't eat anything, and they tell me a brand, and I am so grateful for that, because it's eliminated all the research that I have to do to find something. And veterinary professionals, they all have many pets. They've all seen many things. You all have tips and tricks yourselves, so share that. And then share resources like ours or others that speak to what that family needs or is curious about or what they're challenged with. If they come in and their dog is timid, and there are so many resources. One is suggesting that they come by more often for visits and treats and hugs and things like that. To resources like we would have on our website in terms of how to create a more confident dog, one that enjoys going to the veterinarian. There are just so many things that they can dispense. We have a website as well. It's not only our books, but our website is seen by millions and millions of pet owners a year. We take great pride and put a lot of effort into coming up on Google searches for many top searched things. We are there with a medically responsible, behavior responsible, safety responsible content. We put it through all those filters. Our website has so much content that a veterinarian can share for free. Share a link, put it in a discharge,
I
share it.
wonder, have you ever had, to me, this the first thing that came to my mind was, what a good training tool this would be for the front desk, because the front desk usually is a customer service person, many times without medical training, and they are the ones who are triaging these phone calls. And so how do you cover all the bases? Because there are so many variables, and we hate to do that, follow her training protocol, but so many times just listening to an experienced CSR handle some quirky call where I can remember one coming in where a dog had eaten one of those big sea sponges that you wash your car with. And, how do you manage that phone call? And this dog, it's funny, this dog had eaten in its life several rocks, a corn cob, and now the sea sponge. And so she kept getting thinner and thinner because we kept trying to remove pieces of bowel as she ate whatever it was. But that's a challenge to train, because people don't know what they don't know, and they don't know to ask, like, what should I do if somebody eats a corn cob? And what is that, an emergency? Or a cat swallows a thread with a needle on it. And that happens so often that people are shocked that a cat would eat a needle, but they do. So I think a training, this would be a really good training tool for people too, and your website too.
Yeah. We all in any form of business have to put ourselves in the other person's shoes. And if that were me, what would I want to be told? Mm-hmm. And you don't have to have all the answers. One of the things that I did early on in my career, which served me really well, was I was in a consultancy position. I was working in an agency. I had my own agency that I started afterwards. And so you're in a consultancy capacity and you're being asked questions. And how would you approach this? And what would you do? And if I did not know the answer, I would say, I do not know the answer, but I will get it to you. And I would give them a time frame. If it was something urgent, obviously I'll phone you right back or whatever it is. Or I'll get that to you by the end of the week, set a parameter, promise to find that answer for them. And then when you are knowledgeable in something, they trust you so much more because they know that whatever's coming out of your mouth is truth, because you admitted when you didn't have the answer.
Exactly.
And there are so many good resources out there. And a practice really should have a list of the ones that they give to their team to either learn from themselves or share with our clients. And I hope that our resources are one of those.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's an excellent website. Like I said, I could go down a rabbit hole on it. Let's put it that way. You just keep going from this to this to this. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's good. Yeah. So Anne, are you Canadian originally?
Can you tell? Yes.
About sometimes. About.
Yes, I
do. So how did you decide to move? I mean, was that, I think this is funny because I moved 5 years ago from North Carolina to South Carolina. I had no idea it would be such a nightmare of a challenge to get all the paperwork and the driver's license and so much more. So I can imagine moving from another country. Was it challenging for you to move?
Yeah, it was. Luckily, we didn't have children, which I think makes it so much more complicated. So it is challenging. I mean, there's the work visas associated with it and all the legal stuff. And now operating a company in the US, being a Canadian, there's challenges with that and extra hurdles. It came down to deciding to do something again that scared us. We had never any intention of moving. We had 3 years prior renovated our house to be the house for our retirement. We had deep roots in Toronto. We had no reason to leave, but we were given an opportunity to come here, and we knew it was going to be for a short time. We decided to take it. And here it is, 13 years later, we're still here. So it was a good choice.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask that because I feel like people are, sometimes they get stuck in a position and they're so afraid to change that they spend their lives in misery working at a place that they don't like or living in a place they don't like because they're just scared to do anything else. So I feel like I love to have my guests tell the stories of like overcoming these challenges and just going for it, because that sometimes in life, that's just what you have to do, is just take a deep breath, step off the cliff and jump. And I think, you know, for me, I certainly did it in the middle of the Great Recession. I started a business. Like, who in their right mind does that? But the truth of the matter is veterinarians needed a lot of help because the recession was hitting us hard. And I had a lot of knowledge that I was willing to put out there into the world and I wanted to share. So I feel like if you can be brave, you can take risks, you can, it may not always work out. You might have hated Seattle and moved right back to Toronto, but okay, then you would have. And so I appreciate that story. Just let me ask you this, because you have made a decision to make a big change. What advice would you give somebody when they were making that decision? Because some people just weigh the odds. Other people go, let's just do it. Impulsively jump into the water. What advice would you give people?
Be open. When I was first offered to come to Seattle and join Trupanion, I said, heck no. Like, no, because I already had a very set, I had my company, I had my employees, I had a very set plan for myself. And I didn't see the reason to divert from that. So, but upon consideration and thinking about it, and many, many talks with my husband, and then coming out to visit Seattle, I had been here on business, but I had never been sort of exploring it with a different lens. We decided to be open about it and look at it as an adventure. And if it failed, meaning it wasn't the right decision, well, that's okay. It's an adventure. The way I like to look at things is don't run away from things, run towards things. And I had no reason to leave, where you were just talking about people who are living in misery and they're kind of stuck there. The feeling is that they need to run away from it. And you run towards something, even if it's run towards sitting alone for 6 months without a job, because you know maybe you can afford to do so, and just contemplate. You're running towards yourself. You're running towards, run to something and be open to it. If you're closed, it often won't work out, and then you'll regret the decision. I think when most people look at their lives and they see success, they forget that all the setbacks and all the challenges actually got them there. If those things hadn't happened, they might not be where they are. Mm-hmm. So embrace it, stay open.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, run towards something, because you're, you know, that taking that time to contemplate. I see people who, the behaviors that got them into misery in the first place, because they didn't really take that time to step back and go, what were the decisions that got me into this? And let me think about not doing that again in the next place. Let me be a little more judicious about where I choose to go. And let me ask some better questions about where I go, and really take a little more time to delve into this next new thing, rather than just going, oh, let me go and jump into the car and and drive across the country to do that. So let me ask you this, because you told me that you took drama class. Do you have a secret talent?
No, none whatsoever. I am the most untalented person there is. I can't sing. I can't. Well, okay. I dance. I love dancing. I did something rather unusual about me is I was in theater. And so I learned to project. I have a very mousy, soft voice. So I learned to project. In around 1999, I got the flu and I was hospitalized. And then the subsequent year, my voice started to change. It started to be really difficult for me to push my voice out. And I kind of ignored it. I thought, okay, I'm asthmatic. So I thought, well, that's what it was. Flu virus killed my left vocal cord. And I didn't realize that. Had I done something in that first year, they probably could have repaired the nerves. But because I waited, the only thing left to do was to do a medial thyroplasty, which is putting a plastic block in the middle so that the left vocal cord can stay centered and then hit the right one when it vibrates, because it was so limp on the side. It was really hard for my right vocal cord to hit it. I had to be awake during that surgery because I had to talk through it and they had to make sure that I sounded the same going in and coming out. And so for me, my voice is something that I cherish. I think it's the reason why my husband proposed to me at the time, because one vocal cord down, one to go. I might not be able to talk one day, but it was funny. For 6 weeks, I couldn't talk. I couldn't talk for several weeks. And then I could only talk a certain percentage each week, and it climbed all the time. And my husband loved saying, "You're out of words for today. You're out of words."
That's hilarious. My husband would say that to me. It's like, "Are you done? Okay." That's wonderful. So Anne, tell us, we're close to time now, but tell us a little bit about how people could access the books and the website and how they can order them and anything else you want to tell us about the company.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, preventivet.com is a public website. It's mainly pet owner facing, meaning we're there to be found by pet owners and encourage them to see their veterinarian. So we're there to help that relationship and encourage it. So those articles on our website, if they're shared by veterinarians, you know, they should feel comfortable that we're there supporting them. And then we have a veterinary portal that veterinarians can go in and get all the extra tools and resources, that a lot of stuff we have for free. And then our books are there available for purchase at discount. So that veterinary portal can easily be accessed by going to preventivet.com/4vets. So the number 4vets. They can go into the portal, look at all that we have to offer. And we just have so much more than meets the eye. It's surprising because you look at our public site and you go, well, what do these people do? It's just an educational site, but we give resources to veterinarians. So we want them to be the source of the education. Embrace the fact that people are going to go on Dr. Google. We're there to try to be found. So at least we're supporting you, as opposed to some other blog out there who's giving them all kinds of tips to avoid going to the vet. That's not what we're doing. So that's how they can find us. And we're always open to suggestions. So let us know what we're missing and we will add it.
That sounds great. Well, we will definitely put all the information in the show notes so that people can quickly click on the links and go and find the books and the websites. And, you know, as I said, personally for myself, I found it extremely helpful and interesting. I love the books. I love that idea. We always made nice little welcome packages for new clients and welcome packages for puppies and kittens. And sometimes you can put so much information in there, especially like little manufacturers' brochures, that it almost becomes overwhelming. So having one nice piece of information that goes in there that does a lot of good, and then putting your company's information in there and letting people know your hours and your doctor's bios and a little bit about the story of your practice. And then the patient's health record is always just a really nice package to put together. So I think this is a really good tool. And if I was managing a practice, you would be in my new client, packages.
Okay. Thanks. Well, we have two new books coming out this year for senior pets.
Oh, so excellent.
For senior cats and senior dogs. So
I think that's coming. Wonderful, because there's so many things that we can now do for senior animals, because people think, oh, they were just getting old and they can't do anything about it. But so much can be done for especially arthritic animals, and just, you know, lifestyle changes and adding little ramps and equipment that will help them be mobile again. So that they do live those last few years with a good quality of life up until it's time to not have it anymore. So I'm excited that that's coming out, and thank you guys for doing that. That's wonderful.
Our pleasure. All right.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us today for today's episodes of The Bin. And again, thanks for Anne and spending time with us, and we'll get all that information. Again, I'm Debbie Boone. I am your host here for this episode of The Bend, and we look forward to speaking to you sometime, maybe at AVMA or a conference in the future. And hopefully sharing our new book. My new book was just called Hospitality and Healthcare, and getting that out there. And so we can help veterinarians and their clients have a better experience in the practice. So thanks again, Anne.